but if you really want to draw deer to your property during legal shooting hours, you got to have that cover. You got to have the best cover around. You can have the most desirable food source for miles, but still see, you know, very few deer from the stand, you know, during daylight hours. If you don't have that cover where they feel secure making their way to that food source. Hey guys, welcome to the National Deer Association's Deer Season 365 podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossman. And this week we got something a little different. I don't have a guest scheduled. For the first time, we're just going to kind of dive into a topic, one that is kind of near and dear to me, and that is managing a small property for whitetail deer and deer hunting. Specifically, we're going to look at 7 steps to get big results from your small hunting property. And I hope you guys enjoy this format. I'm certainly not getting away from our regular interviews. These types of episodes will be probably few and far between, but I wanted to try one and just hopefully get some feedback from you guys. I would love to hear whether or not this is something you enjoy and want to listen to. And you can give me that feedback either way. I don't care whether you enjoy it or whether you don't. Please let me know. You can email me directly at Brian, and that's B-R-I-A-N, at deerassociation.com. You can reach out on one of our social media channels, or you can leave us a written review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Hopefully, leave us a positive rating, a 5-star rating, and just drop it in the review there, whether or not this is a format that you enjoy. And I will definitely kind of take note of those and see whether or not we do more of these in the future. But hopefully, if you hunt a small property or own a small property, hopefully this episode will be beneficial for you. And even if you don't, hey, you may pick up some things along the way. My background is managing large properties, large tracts of public land in my previous roles with a couple different state wildlife agencies. So I have that background, but now I'm a small landowner, own 15 acres here in West Central Georgia. And for the last 3.5, I guess, years, I've been kind of practicing some of this stuff we're going to talk about. And, you know, some of it's worked, some of it hasn't. So we're going to dive into that and hopefully you guys enjoy it. Before we get started, though, this week's episode is brought to you by NDA sponsor PH Outdoors, makers of the G-Series no-till drills and crimper rollers. Seed and fuel are expensive these days, and your time is valuable as well. The PH Outdoors G-Series no-till drills were developed with hunters and wildlife managers in mind. It is a true no-till drill that will plant a variety of seeds and blends into the ground, even in tough soil conditions. The calibration process is the easiest of any no-till drill on the market, requiring no tools for your seed size, seed rate, and depth adjustment. No gears or sprockets need to be changed, and the calibration can be done in the field in minutes thanks to the infinitely variable gearbox and integrated calibration tray. There's even a calibration calculator on the PH Outdoors website to further simplify this process. The G-Series drill is available in 4 sizes, ranging from 3-foot to 10-foot, which comes standard with a 3-point connection, so there is one that is the right size for your tractor. There is an available tow kit option for all sizes, including a kit for the 3-foot model, allowing it to be used with the UTV. They also make crimper rollers in 6-foot, 8-foot, and 10-foot working widths that are 3-point connections, as well as a 4-foot tow-behind model that is perfect to tow behind a UTV or small tractor. Head over to ph-outdoors.com for more information. One more thing before we dive into our conversation on managing small deer hunting properties. This is your last chance to get in on our 2024 United for Deer Spring Sweepstakes, NDA's biggest sweepstakes ever. Tuesday, April 30th is the deadline to get your tickets for a chance to win 1 of 5 major prize packages featuring items like a Tracker 800 SX Crew Cab UTV, a $10,000 Academy Sports and Outdoors gift card, a PH Outdoors G3 no-till drill, a premium Kentucky elk tag, an Illinois deer hunt, and just a whole lot more. And man, tickets start at just $20, and all proceeds raised will go towards NDA's mission of ensuring the future of wild deer, wildlife habitat, and hunting. To get your tickets today, head over to deerassociation.com and look for the United for Deer sweepstakes banner right there on our homepage. All right, diving into the topic at hand, I want to talk to you guys about 7 steps that you can take to get big results from your small hunting property. And this is based on an article that I recently wrote for a website. So if you want to dive into more of this, once you've listened to the podcast or just want to have something you can kind of go back and refer to, you can check that out on our website. You know, I'm a firm believer as a small property owner myself that with a good layout and a detailed hunting strategy, even small properties can provide excellent deer hunting opportunities. I've owned my place here for 3 years now. I've had some great hunts on it. I've been fortunate enough to harvest a couple decent bucks, and there's been several even better bucks that I wasn't able to harvest. And so over that time, I've learned a lot about what to do and what not to do when managing and hunting a small property. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to kind of pass that along for those of you who may be dealing with the same thing. So in this podcast, we'll look at developing a plan for your property that will guide your habitat management efforts and steer your hunting strategy to get the most out of every acre you have available so you can avoid some of the common mistakes that I've made along the way. Before we dive into that planning process, though, there's a few things you need to keep in mind before you develop a habitat plan and a hunting strategy, kind of some what I call some challenges of a small property. First, you have to accept that your results are going to be impacted, at least in part, by the actions or lack thereof of your neighbors. It's just an unfortunate truth. When you own a small property, those deer are not going to spend 100% of the time on that property. You know, they're going to be spending time on neighboring properties as well. The average home range of a whitetail buck is roughly 1 square mile or 640 acres. And of course, that varies depending on factors like habitat quality, even down to the individuality of the buck. You know, some bucks are more homebodies than others. But the point is, even with the best habitat around, you're not going to hold deer on your small property 100% of the time. So you have to lay out and manage your property with neighboring properties in mind. Just accept that you're sharing these deer. Of course, deer are public domain. They're a public resource, but you're going to be sharing the deer on your property with your neighbors. So that's one of the challenges. Second, we know from a lot of past research that deer react pretty quickly and negatively to hunting pressure. You know, pretty obvious, but it's very easy to overpressure a small property, much more so than a larger property where you can move around and have a lot more stands you know, the deer are less likely to completely leave the property. They may shift their focus, shift their travel corridors or travel patterns. But on a bigger property, you know, they're probably not going to completely leave the area. So to maximize your hunting opportunities, you're going to have to lay out your property in a way that minimizes the impact of hunting pressure. And of course, you'll also need to hunt smart and make the most of the opportunities that you do get. And we'll talk a lot more about that side of it later. But with those limitations in mind, let's take a look at how to start laying out your small hunting property. And for me, the first step in developing a plan is to take inventory of the current habitat composition of not only your property, but again, on those surrounding properties as well. And of course, I'm certainly not encouraging you to trespass on your neighbor's property. But fortunately, with today's technology, it's easier than ever to get an idea of what's on those properties around you. With mapping apps like Onyx Hunt, you can get a real feel for the habitat and food sources and terrain features all around you, you know, as far out as you want to go. But I like to start by looking at those surrounding properties first, because that'll ultimately guide how you lay out and manage your small parcel. You know, deer have three main survival needs, kind of just like us. They need food, they need water, and they need shelter or security. And you could technically, you could break those down into four things. Shelter and security is two different things. But for the most part, it's kind of one and the same. And in most of the whitetails range, especially areas east of the Mississippi River where I'm at, water's not going to be a limiting factor. It could possibly be where you're at, but for most of us, the focus is going to be on that food and that security. And of course, that again, that security comes in the form of two things: a good cover and minimal hunting pressure. And for this first kind of part of the podcast, we'll just be looking at the cover aspect of it, and we'll get into the hunting part of it there, kind of at the tail end. So you can start the inventory process by taking note of any seasonal food sources available on surrounding properties. That may be, you know, it may be food plots, it may be agricultural fields, a fruit orchard, you know, it could be natural early successional habitat, or it could be, you know, big mature acorn producing oak trees. Mark those areas on your mapping app and take note of when those food sources would most likely attract deer to that area. You know, by knowing what food sources are found on those neighboring properties, that can really guide you on what you need to provide on your own property. You know, for example, if the neighbor has a 100-acre field that they're rotating between corn and soybeans, probably wouldn't make a lot of sense for you to plant a half-acre soybean plot on your place the same year that they have 100 acres of soybeans. In fact, the years that they do plant soybeans on that big field, you may be better off planting a cool season mix that provides food source once those soybeans are kind of done and gone and harvested. When they have corn planted, then, you know, you might do well growing soybeans of your own or some other similar warm season plot, whether it be cowpeas, lab, you know, a lot of different options out there. But the idea is to complement those surrounding properties rather than trying to compete with one another. It's going to be hard for your small property to compete with a bigger neighboring property by providing the same types of food sources. You know, being surrounded by agricultural fields, if that's your situation, that can present a great opportunity to, you know, maybe plant mass producing trees on your property, both soft mass species like persimmons and plums, crab apples, pears, as well as hard mass species like your red and white oaks. Of course, you know, that's not going to be a quick fix. If you go planting hardwoods like oaks, that's obviously a long-term investment, but it may be the right thing for your property for future generations. So again, think of ways you can complement the properties around you, maybe provide something that they don't. In my case, both, you know, myself and neighboring properties, there's plenty of oak trees, but little else in the way of food sources. Not a lot of food plots, no agricultural fields immediately surrounding my property. So it did make sense to add, you know, I got a small food plot on my place and I'm slowly expanding and working on to make as good as I can. That made sense because it provides a food source when there's not other food sources available. But another thing that was lacking around me and really key to, I think, what will ultimately be making the property a more successful hunting property is cover. The properties around me, for the most part, lack good cover, and my property is, you know, I'm getting there, but I still lack a lot of good cover as well. I'm slowly chipping away at that with some forest stand improvement work, but cover is key, and I'm going to dive into that a little more. You know, when it comes to food sources, you know, food plots get all the press, you know, all the popular content online and in magazines over the years has really put a focus on food plots. But if you really want to draw deer to your property during legal shooting hours, you got to have that cover. You got to have the best cover around. You can have the most desirable food source for miles, but still see, you know, very few deer from the stand, you know, during daylight hours, if you don't have that cover where they feel secure making their way to that food source. And they still may not come out into the food source till dark, but, you know, if the cover's there, they're going to get close and they're going to be a lot more apt to making a daylight appearance. So, and I really feel like that's consistently one of the most overlooked pieces of deer habitat. And the great part about cover, good cover, is that it often provides additional food sources as well, and food sources in times when other ones might not be available, or you know, if you have a year where you've planted a food plot and there was a drought, or there other conditions just weren't right, and the food plot didn't do well, man, that native cover can, or native forage can really, really save you and keep those deer in your area. So don't overlook that as well. Getting the best of both worlds there with that early successional habitat. You get good cover and you get a great food source. So kind of diving into creating cover, there's a few ways that you can do that, provide cover on your property, depending on what's currently there. If your property is mostly forested, like the mine, or at least the back half of mine, then thinning your timber to get sunlight to the forest floor can be a great way to stimulate that young forest growth, that early successional habitat that's going to provide, again, cover and browse for deer. That's kind of my situation here. If the trees are providing, you know, very little wildlife value or timber value, just, you know, if you just have kind of poor quality or poor species composition, then you might even just decide to clear cut a portion of the property. And again, doing the same thing, it's going to provide a flush of excellent cover of natural food. And it also give you the opportunity to kind of to steer the future forest composition yourself by planting. You can go in and plant those desirable tree species rather than having, you know, the poor ones come back. You can kind of guide that future succession there. But I will kind of give a caveat for all this. Before you make any major timber management decisions, please, please, please consult with a forester who understands not only, you know, timber management and timber values, but also wildlife and specifically deer and deer management, because that's going to be key. If you just get any forester in there that maybe one without a wildlife background, you know, their full focus is going to be on maximum timber value. Their recommendations are going to be a lot different than one that has that deer management knowledge. And of course, you want one that's going to look and listen to your goals and your desires, whether that be mostly timber value or mostly, you know, improved deer hunting, and make recommendations based on that. But I just want to say, don't get out there, you know, cutting down all your trees, clear cutting an area, and then realize, you know, that you've really messed up your future timber value. You know, if that's something you're concerned with, I'm, you know, on my property here, it's small enough. I have some trees back there that are probably worth something, but I don't have a big enough property to really attract a logger to come in. And I really want to be able to pick and choose the trees that I leave and the trees that go. So I really haven't been worried about that. I've just been cutting and killing the trees that I think are the least desirable, and leaving the ones that I want to leave, the best producers of mast, and just leaving it at that and getting that sunlight to the forest floor. So I'm not so much worried about timber value on my small place here, but you might be. So just something to keep in mind there. Now, if your property is mostly open land, then providing that excellent food and cover is even easier. And in a lot of cases, you might just be able to park the tractor and bush hog and let nature take its course. If you do have undesirable or noxious weeds that are present, or, you know, in the seed bank, then it may take a little more work. You might have to do some herbicide treatments, some spot treatments to keep that under control and to get those more desirable species. But in most cases, you know, you really don't have to go in and plant anything. Certainly, if you want to plant a food plot, you can plant sections of that open area and leave parts of it fallow. You can rotate those food plots and let, you know, let them go fallow. Maybe plant a strip A 1 year, Then the second year, move over on the other side of it and plant, you know, strip B, and while letting strip A go fallow. And then the third year, you know, you move over again, plant strip C, let strips A and B remain fallow. And it just gives you, it gives you some variety there, some diversity. You know, you got 2 year old fallow food plot, you got a 1 year old fallow food plot, and then you got your new food plot, and you can just rotate that way every 3 years, 4 years, however you want to do it, to provide that diversity and variety and cover and stuff on your property. So just something to keep in mind, an opportunity there that you might want to do. But I would caution you, depending on the size of openings you have, not to go overboard and just clear the entire thing and plant it in a food plot. You know, it might be the right move, but I would consider fallow areas, early successional habitat, maybe around that food plot. Again, that's going to provide cover where those deer will feel safe getting into that food plot, maybe during daylight hours. And again, it'll provide forage when the food plot may not be producing at those times of year. Once you have a good understanding of the habitat on neighboring properties, you can move forward with one of two strategies. You can either focus all your efforts to provide that kind of one key thing that's missing on your on the other properties, or you might want to take a broader approach and provide, you know, every resource possible on your small property. Again, depending on what's on the surrounding properties. Obviously, if your property is very small and exists in an area where there's an obvious lack of maybe food during some portion of the deer season, or maybe it, you know, there's really no good cover on the surrounding properties, then you'll probably want to focus on providing that one missing piece. But if you have a little more ground to work with, then you can try to provide a wider variety of maybe food and cover to address the seasonal needs of the local deer herd. You know, again, you're not going to keep those deer on your property 100% of the time, but you can certainly get them to spend, you know, a better portion of their time there, and maybe spend some time there when the time is right, you know, during deer season when it matters most. Now, you know, on my 15 acres here, I know I can't provide all the resources that deer in my area need throughout the year. So I'm focusing most of my efforts on creating good thick cover that's lacking on adjacent properties. And then the food plot that I have, which I didn't mention, but I've kind of strategically, it just worked out well for me. I've strategically planted the food plot on kind of the far end of my property from where the deer are bedding on the neighboring property, which means to get to it, they basically have to cross just about my entire property. But they're during that process, well, I'll get into that later. I'll get into the hardwoods later. But the key is, you know, I planted a food plot to draw them across my property. But that food plot certainly doesn't provide a year-round food source to hold deer here. Now, once you've taken inventory of both your property and those around it and kind of started making those decisions on what changes need to be made to the habitat, it's time to develop a plan for where everything will go. And I like to reverse engineer this part by thinking about how I ultimately want the deer to behave and then tailoring my plan to guide them in that direction. So you can start by thinking about where deer are currently bedding and feeding. If you've owned the property for a while, hopefully you kind of got an idea of that. And then think about how that may be impacted by your habitat management plans. So based on those locations, those bedding and feeding locations, how can you set up the property in a way that allows you to intercept those deer between the two? You know, if they're already existing trails or travel corridors they're using to do so, then you can use that to your advantage. You know, I wouldn't recommend necessarily trying to change their patterns if you don't have to. Just enhance those areas that they're already using. Now, for instance, going back, this is what I started to talk about a minute ago. I didn't want to get ahead of myself, but you know, the food plot on my property is on the far side. It does have good cover right around it and kind of thick young pines, and it gets a lot of deer use, but typically only at night. And that's because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the deer are bedding on the neighboring property. They're having to cross my hardwoods and then off to my food plot But those hardwoods right now, or most of them, are wide open. I've done a little bit of forest stand improvement back there. I've thickened up a small, maybe a 1 acre of the 6 or 7 acres that are back there on the back half. I've done some work on, but I still have a lot more work to do. But what I'm getting at is they're not comfortable crossing those wide open hardwoods during daylight hours. So they're not getting to my food plot until well into the night. So a primary goal of mine moving forward is to continue thinning those hardwoods, just leaving a few of my best producing oaks, and a few other, you know, random species trees, just so there's some diversity back there. I'll leave a hickory or two for squirrels. There's quite a few beech trees back there. I'm probably, you know, leave a nice beech back there and maybe some other stuff, but I'm really picking and choosing which trees I leave and getting rid of a lot more than I'm leaving standing to get that sunlight to the forest floor. But I need to get that thick understory developed so those deer will feel safe traveling, you know, through those hardwoods during daylight hours to get to that food plot. And then somewhere along that travel corridor will provide a great future stand location to, you know, to get a shot at a deer moving to and from bedding to feeding. You ultimately want to lay things out in a way to kind of maximize your hunting efforts and minimize hunting pressure. And again, we'll talk more about the hunting side of it shortly, but in some cases, your current habitat conditions might dictate where certain features have to go. You know, you're not always going to be able to put stuff where you would ideally have it because, you know, again, what's currently there may have an impact on your ability to do that. For example, from a hunting standpoint, it may make the most sense to have a food plot in one location of the property. But if that area doesn't, you know, already have an opening with the right soils, that may dictate you having to plant a food plot somewhere else. You know, you got to consider those factors like, you know, the current vegetation, soil quality, the slope, sunlight, you know, availability, as well as, you know, your equipment availability. Obviously, you got to have the equipment to be able to get all this stuff done. And that's certainly been a limiting factor to me at times, having to kind of beg and borrow to get equipment in here to do what I needed to do. So just be realistic with it. As you're laying this out, you might not be able to lay it out exactly the way you want it, but that's okay. You just got to do the best you can with what you got. You know, short of starting with a blank slate of just one big open field, it's going to be tough to lay out a property perfectly. You know, the perfect property. You just got to do the best with what you have, and make the most of it. So, kind of getting around to the hunting side of it, one of the biggest downsides to a small hunting tract is that it's very, very easy to overhunt. So an important part of laying out a property is trying to do so in a way where you have the least amount of impact each time you head into the field. And one obvious way to do that is to make sure you plan stand locations to take advantage of different wind directions. You know, with a heavy focus on the most common wind directions for your area during deer season. So it's important that you know that, you know, the prevailing winds, and kind of strategically plan stand locations accordingly. You don't want to only be able to hunt your property with a west wind. I mean, there might be certain circumstances where it just works out that way. But in most cases, if you have multiple stand locations, you can kind of plan for different winds. Going back to the travel corridor here on my place between bedding and feeding, it basically runs south to north from where they bed to where they feed. So I need to have stand locations on kind of the west and the east sides of that corridor to be able to handle a variety of wind directions. And that'll allow me to hunt it pretty much any day other than those with the kind of a due north wind, which would be pushing everything back into that bedding. But otherwise, you know, I'd be able to hunt it almost any kind of eastern or westerly wind. Now, aside from just stand locations, it's also important to plan your entrance and exit routes to those locations. You have to be able to access them in a way that doesn't send your scent into nearby bedding areas. You know, you don't want to be walking into your stand location. You can be as careful or as quiet as possible getting into that stand and not actually bump the deer by sight. But if your scent's blowing right into, you know, towards where they're bedding, then, you know, you've probably already pretty much run the hunt without even knowing it. You most likely won't end up seeing a deer, and you'll be asking yourself, you know, what happened? Why didn't the deer show up? Well, they knew you were there, you know, when you first got in the stand. So, and you also don't want the deer to have to cross your scent trail before they get to you, you know, and present a shot opportunity. And then as you kind of plan and develop these access routes, whenever possible, you know, if you can screen those even better by planting, whether it's planting some kind of annual cover along those paths, like corn or Egyptian wheat, or maybe it's just creating thick cover along those travel routes through timber management, you know, cutting some trees, getting sunlight in there and letting it grow up thick, at least in a narrow area there where you can kind of use that for cover getting in and out of your stand. Because again, you want to be able to access your stands quietly and discreetly as possible. Of course, the cool thing about a really small hunting property, it's not something I've implemented yet, but I'm going to try it this next season, is you can go in and literally just, you know, blow with a leaf blower, blow trails to your stand locations. And it doesn't take a lot of time, and it will allow you to slip in and out, you know, extremely quietly. You know, no longer worrying about, you know, soft stepping and crunching leaves and how much noise you're making. You can slip in on those blown paths really quietly, and then you just have to focus on, you know, getting up in the tree as quietly as possible. So just an idea, something I'm going to try to implement this year for the couple spots that I typically hunt and see how that goes. But and then kind of the final piece of the puzzle is just to hunt smart. And what I mean by that is, you know, it only takes one bad decision hunting a small property to change your deer behavior and really kind of turn the odds of success against you. And I've certainly learned that myself the hard way through trial and error. Went in last year, I was just chomping at the bit when season opened. I had some does using my food plot up here, food plot area. And so I slipped in there and shot one of the does right off the bat. And of course, that really, really hurt deer activity on the area for a while. You know, and that may be okay. You have to decide what your goals are there. I just enjoy getting to use the property. I got to shoot that doe with my recurve, which made it all the more special. So, you know, I don't necessarily regret it, but it did have an impact. And you have to just be aware of that, you know, what kind of impact you're going to have, that hunting pressure. You got to hunt it smart. I recommend, you know, if you are after a mature buck or a specific buck, you know, save those hunts for when conditions are perfect and you know the deer are using your property during daylight hours. And you know, you can kind of get that intel with trail cameras. If you're a trail camera user, you can kind of have an idea of, you know, when the deer are getting comfortable on your property and using it during daylight hours. When you do decide it's time to hunt, make sure you're executing flawlessly. You know, you want to watch that wind, take your time again, getting in and out of the stand. Even, you know, it's really easy to be cautious going into the stand, but a lot of times we don't think about it coming back out. But, you know, again, you don't want to bump the deer coming out either if you can help it. It's going to make them aware of what's going on, and it's going to make it harder. It's going to diminish your chances on those future hunts. So you want to get in and out as cleanly as possible. So plan those routes and hunt as smart as you can, as quietly as you can, and pay attention to that wind and your scent. And with that, guys, we'll kind of wrap this one up. Owning a small hunting property, man, it can be extremely rewarding. One of the best decisions I ever made was buying this 15 acres. And hey, the deer hunting can be phenomenal under the right circumstances. It all boils down to, you know, having a good layout, providing excellent habitat in the form of food and cover, and then having a well-executed hunting strategy. Those are the key factors. But man, when it all comes together and you finally, you get to punch a tag on that first buck or that best buck, all that planning and hard work is more than worth it. I can tell you that. I love killing a deer on public land. I've been a public land hunter for years, and that's definitely rewarding. But there's something just as rewarding, and you know, it's different, but it's just as rewarding when you kill a deer on a property that you've kind of poured your heart and soul into. And, you know, it's your little piece of dirt. It makes it all worthwhile. So hopefully this information will help you guys out. Again, let me know what you think of these types of kind of individual podcasts, just covering a specific topic. Not going to be doing these a lot, but maybe here and there. But I'd love your feedback on whether or not you think these are worthwhile. So again, my email is Brian, and that's Brian at deerassociation.com. Or hey, leave us a 5-star rating and drop a review. And if you're listening on Apple Podcast, and you can let us know what you think of these right from there. So, and with that, guys, I'll catch you on the next episode.